again, friends. You're listening to the 90s Kids Podcast, our podcast dedicated to the excellence of Disney animated daytime programming. Every week, we gather together here at the Nerd Melt Cinema to discuss one episode of one of your favorite Disney afternoon shows. Today, we bring you Season 2, Episode 9 of Disney's famous Gargoyles, titled City of Stone, Part 1, in which Demona plots with Xanatos to steal 1 minute of life from everyone in the city, an excuse for how she's lived for over 1,000 years. The Weird Sisters appear and watch as the spell Demona casts instead turns the humans to stone during the night, allowing Demona to easily dispatch them as she remembers her true life, growing old in fear of humans until offered safe haven in a new castle. Joining us in studio this week to discuss his career-defining role as Xanatos is Sir Jonathan Frakes, so stay tuned till after the break.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and discuss extraneous crap, because we can't read books fast enough to just do System Mastery weekly. I'm Jeff, and John's here with me. Say hello to the nice people, John.
Hello, nice people.
There it is. So last week we recorded an episode where we read all about supplements.
Yes, we did.
Or we read two supplements anyway.
Well, all about it.
We read all about every supplement ever written.
Yeah. And then we talked about two of them, but just rest assured that we did read all of them.
We read about every single supplement. We didn't read them, like the Wikipedia entries. And not just game supplements, but like just supplements. Like,
oh, yeah.
I read a lot about vitamin B12.
Yeah, zinc was my favorite.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that helps you remember your dreams, and you can rub it on your nose to look like a lifeguard.
Yeah.
That might be the easiest Halloween costume. That short of Beagle Boys.
Yeah. You know, just one person goes a lifeguard, one person goes a beagle boy. One person goes a karate guy.
A karate guy. That's a great costume.
Yeah, karate guy's the best.
You could also do the tucking the upper half of a gi into tight jeans, like your Roadhouse 80s, and go as karate casual.
Oh, yeah, it's casual Friday at the dojo.
Yeah, wear your jeans. Tuck in your gi, though, because come on.
We're professionals here.
Also, tuck those jeans into some boots, buddy. But Beagle Boy is the best costume.
Oh, yeah.
Make a number out of 1s, 6s, and 7s, put it on your red shirt, get a nice pair of blue pants and a hat, and you're a Beagle. Oh, you need a little domino mask, too. You need a raccoon mask.
Well.
You need a raccoon. They all wear raccoon masks.
Well.
I mean, come on. Big Time wears one. Burger wears one. Bouncer wears one. Even what's her name? The ringleader, the lady.
Ma Beagle?
Ma Beagle. She also wears one.
Yeah, well, of course they do. They're villains.
They're the Beagle Boys.
And mother.
Okay, so anyway, this week we were going to talk a bit about more about supplements and discuss which ones we like and which ones we don't.
Yeah, and just sort of generally what makes for a good supplement as opposed to ones that aren't really adding much to what you're doing.
Yeah. Now, let's just go quickly around and discuss our favorite supplement.
Yes, let's go around to everyone here.
Okay, let's start with Xandar. Xandar?
Well, I'd like to talk about supplements for D&D.
Really? That's your Xandar?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think I tried to start with Martian, and then it just went into, me. I don't know, horrible.
Let's check in with Scruffy. Scruffy, your favorite?
Yep.
Scruffy? I would have figured it'd be one of those porns he's always reading. National Pornographic.
Yeah.
Jugs.
Zero G jugs. Weird junk. I think I just made that last one up, but I would like to see you reading it.
See, but that's great if you're a janitor and you're reading weird junk, because it might not be porn. You might just be reading about junk.
Might be.
So, yeah. The best thing with supplements for me, for what makes a good supplement, is adding something that might not have been necessary in the main book, but adds some depth to it. Because, okay, one of the ones we talked about was the Haven City of Violence supplement,
Path of Rage.
And in Path of Rage, it added a bunch of new skills, and so did the Federation book for the Prime Directive
Prime
game.
But
none of them were necessary. Like, you don't need to have a specific skill for just scuba diving or just parachuting.
I mean, you do if your game is about scuba diving or parachuting.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're like, I'm running Extreme Sports the RPG.
Here's the thing. If you're running a RPG where you're going to be parachuting more than once, then maybe you need the skill for it. But if you're only doing it once in your game, it's just a dramatic entrance or a dramatic escape. And you don't need to determine whether or not you die in a fall, because that doesn't make for a very interesting story.
Yeah, and that's the problem with a lot of supplements that come out with things that just add more options that then become actually restrictions.
They become mandatory because all of a sudden, where your character used to be able to parachute just because there wasn't a skill about it, now there is, and your character can't parachute anymore.
Yeah, so when it becomes a thing where, oh yeah, before I could go ahead and say, well, I do this or I do that or I know about whatever, as soon as, say, in D&D you add a knowledge whatever skill, before, if you could have just said, yeah, my guy knows about meh, but now that there's a knowledge skill based around it, you have to have that knowledge skill, and now you can't just know things.
Right. I would say one of my favorite supplements was the old brown cover player's option guides for D&D 2nd Edition. I mean, granted, I don't think they're especially good now, but when I was a kid, those were the best. Man, I still have my old complete Bard's Handbook. That is so good.
Oh, back when bards were good.
Oh, they weren't good. Well, that book actually really helped them. They were pretty bad in generic 2nd edition D&D. They were basically just slow cast wizards. Anyway, I've always been partial to those books because they added so much stuff and they didn't really take anything away. They didn't make it harder to be a fighter. Granted, the fighter one, a lot of them were really boring. The fighter, the cleric, the rogue, all of those are just like, well, we'll add a rich guy and a poor guy and an Amazon and one who lives in the desert.
Yeah, I remember I went to go see a seminar from Rich Fighter, Poor Fighter. Like I said, I think some of them were good, and most of the time when you're just adding, like, a class option or some, like, feat options or whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't limit what you can do, it gives you options.
Yeah.
I liked some of the old D&D supplement things. You have some that are like, say, any of the Rifts ones that are just like, here's the conversion book.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, there's actually... Yeah, Rifts conversion book is a really interesting supplement because it's just dragging in stuff from other Palladium universes. And
yeah, it's pretty much...
What's weird is that it's half that and then half of it's new shit that he never wrote about before. Like, well, those Eandros lizard people are in there.
Yeah, I was going to say half, well, actually more than half, most of the book is really just sort of a monster manual that then also lets you occasionally play as some of the monsters.
Yeah.
But then it had, like, a new class in it.
Yep, Warlock.
It had ways to convert your superheroes from Heroes Unlimited.
Yeah, or your ninjas, or your characters from Palladium Fantasy.
Yeah. And it then brought... a bunch of the
fantasy
the
races
monster,
over.
Yeah, the monster races and fantasy races over.
I read Rifts way before I ever got my hands on Palladium Fantasy, so when I was reading through that, and he had that big section on, like, the differences between goblins and hobgoblins, and that section on fairies, and I was like, what is all this shit? Why would you put this in your Rifts game? And then I did. You know, we were playing Rifts back then, I was like, man, how come we never meet any of these stupid fantasy races? And my DM was like, okay. You find a glen full of annoying fairies, and they all have 10 MDC.
See, and that is one of the issues with a supplement, especially like Rift's conversion book was one of the first books for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a book that comes out and it's one of the main supplements for it, whether it's the DMG or Monster Manual or something like that, you want to use that in your game. And so if you have some ideas for, like, here are things you find in the world, your players are going to want to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want it to just be, I copied and pasted from another thing and put it in here.
Another thing I also wrote. Because then your player reads it and he's like, wow, I thought this was supposed to be like a kind of cyberpunk post-apocalypse skull robots. What's in here? Hobgoblins? 5 kinds of fantasy giants?
Yeah.
A whole bunch of dumb dragons? I mean, the conversion book's got the best list of Rift's dragons. It's got your Kukulkans and your Hydras.
Yeah, the only thing we didn't get is the Cheyenne Ku.
Yeah, they didn't come out later. Until Rifts, I want to say England.
Yeah.
Although they get mentioned a bunch in Atlantis and a bunch of other places because they make the tattoos. I played as one once.
A tattoo?
No, a Cheyenne Ku dragon. I talked my way into it. And then I realized that they're terrible because all they do is make tattoos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're still a dragon. You're not terrible.
All right, so pop quiz. What is Riff's Conversion Book 2?
Riff's Conversion Book 2 is the Pantheons.
Yes, good.
Yeah, Pantheons of the Multiverse.
Of the Megaverse, indeed.
Well, whatever.
It doesn't matter. It's weird because it's even less conversion-y. Like, I don't know where... It's converting actual gods from actual mythology.
It's odd that he would still call it a conversion book, but I guess it didn't fit as a dimension book or a world book, so he just... already had the term conversion book.
The other option open to him at the time was source book, because source book includes things like Riff's Source Book 1, which doesn't even have a subtitle. That's the one with the robot construction guidelines and the kind of adventure stuff about Archie, the brain in a box that pretends to be a way larger brain.
Yeah, you know, when you can get your like robo dogs.
Yeah, it had the whole. It had that overly done Riff's construction guide for how to build a robot, where you like roll for your budget and all that.
Uh-huh.
That was all in there. That book was not... it also had a couple monsters that show up later. The Witchling and the Neuron Beast.
Woo! The Neuron Beast kept showing up.
Yeah.
He really liked that one.
That was a weird one, because normally the problem with Riffs is that he writes the monster once, and then it never gets mentioned again.
Well, especially because he writes a monster and he's like, 70% of the population of this place is all this thing.
Yeah.
Never mentioned again.
I noticed that, for example, Riff's Vampire Kingdoms introduces the Pogtall Giants, which are giants that can unhinge their mouths to eat big ostrich eggs.
Yep.
I think it's really neat. They like hate dragons professionally. And then they show up again in Riff South America. I was like, oh my god, they showed up again. What happened?
Huh?
It's because C.J. Carella wrote it, and that guy's a goddamn good author.
He's a professional.
We like C.J. Carella around here.
Yay, he wrote good job, C.J.
He wrote Cinematic Unisystem. Contact us sometime, C.J., we like you. We know you don't listen.
Yeah, we know.
Okay, so, I think there are definitely some good supplements out there. I always hated the ones that just add world details and don't have any new rules in them at all.
Yeah, like the Haven one that we looked at really was just, hey man, did you want to know about this particular part of town? Like, okay, I know that maybe if I wanted to set a story somewhere, then that would be fine, but then I would want to buy a book that was specifically that. Like,
yeah,
if I buy one of the Exalted supplements, say that's like, here's a supplement specifically about, like, the East. I go, okay, I expect it to be about locations in the East.
Even then, you know you're going to get a couple of magic items and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'd say the worst books I ever read were the old Palladium Fantasy supplements, because they're straight up just, here's a town. In this town, this square is a bread shop. Bread costs 1 gold for a loaf of bread. And the next shop over is a baker. They make pastries instead of bread. I shouldn't have said baker. I should have said something significantly more different. But no, they're just nothing. Like, Palladium Fantasy book Old Ones has nothing about old gods in it. It's just a bunch of lists of cities.
Yeah, it's one of the more disappointing ones, because you see the term, like, Old Ones, you're like, oh man, this is going to be great. No, it isn't.
No, it's terrible. All right, so there are good and bad supplements out there. And are we going to do more supplement stuff on the show, do you think?
I mean, it's possible. If any of the books we read, especially the weird ones, have supplements out there that they actually managed to print, I would be amazed to see what they put in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
if Don't Look Back, Terror is Never Far Behind has a supplement...
Holy cow, that'd be great.
Oh, I would love to read that.
Yeah, so... You know, we're open to it. We'll probably, because they're usually smaller, we can probably chew through them at a fairly fast pace. I actually know that we have a bunch of mail heading towards us right now, which includes what I've heard described as a bunch of silly D20 supplements, like specifically D&D stuff.
Huh.
So, hey, maybe we'll do one of those.
Yeah.
Why not? All right. So, you want to answer some questions?
Let's answer a couple of questions. Just a couple.
Let's do some questions today. All right. This one's from Lawrence A., and he says, you've talked at length about how you feel about comedy games. But what about parody games? Things like The Scroll of Swallowed Darkness, Dudes of Legend, or Shadows of Iceland. I only know White Wolf games. Do you find a company taking the piss out of their own tics amusing, or are you in the, if you know you've got these weird obsessions, why don't you do something about it camp?
Well, I mean, the reason you don't do something about it is because your fan base likes your dumb crap. Like, the reason they keep buying your dumb White Wolf game is because you're White Wolf.
Right, and why do we keep mentioning cheese dudes on this show? People seem to like it.
The world may never know.
No, yeah.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a cheese dude?
Well, we've established it's because they're our sponsors, and the correct answer to that is 7.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's ever more or less than 7, please contact management.
Yeah, contact management and have fresh cheese dudes brought to your table immediately.
We are so sorry if this ever happens.
Yeah. Okay. But I'd actually never read one of these. I mean, I know they exist, the self-done parodies or the slight parodies of other genres of games. I'd say Hackmaster is a good example of this sort of thing, which, you know, tries to take the piss out of D&D a little bit.
Which I like the idea of them. Because rather than the comedy game, which most comedy games are trying to go from their own idea, whether it be like, we're going to try and do cartoons, but it's comedy. It's not a specific thing we're making fun of. With the parody game, I can't see it lasting long, but it's one of those ideas that I think would be great for certain groups. If I have a Vampire the Masquerade group that plays a whole bunch, and then I go, okay, guys, we're going to do a one-shot in a game that makes fun of Vampire the Masquerade. As long as you have a group that has a sense of humor, great.
I'd kind of like a joke option to insert into Vampire the Masquerade. Like, you know, you release a clan book that's just some stupid kind of vampire that doesn't fit in.
It's just clowns.
Like, Choculas.
Oh my god, Clan Chocula would be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. How much fun would it be to show up to like a serious LARP with your carefully assembled Clan Chocula character?
Yeah, I'm my power of Cocoati.
Or Duculas.
Yeah. No, an entire clan book of just joke things would be amazing.
Just famous joke, like harmless vampires.
Yeah.
Would be my favorite thing to bring to a LARP and be like, that'd be fine for me if it was built to be compatible. It'd be like having Dan in Street Fighter games. It's fine. I don't care if Dan's in there. It's funny.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I haven't read one, but I think they're great. I think they would be a good idea just to have something around to read. You know, like, I enjoy Airplane the movie. I don't really think Airplane the role-playing game would fly, because it's just the jokes wear thin after one run-through.
Would fly. Yeah. See, I think also if a company is self-aware enough to know it does certain things, you at least know that someone at the company has an eye on that. If they take themselves so seriously that they would be completely unable to do that, then I think you reach a point where you get a game that ends up way up its own ass, which, I mean, White Wolf very much does in a lot of places.
There's so many, I can't even tell what's real White Wolf and what isn't, because I'm not especially familiar with the genre, so every time I see one of those, like, princess, the heartstrings or whatever games, and I'm like, oh, is that actual White Wolf, or is that some dumb fan thing? I have no idea. What about Genghis, the transgression? Every time I read one, I just want to make one up to take the piss out of the genre myself. I want to make, like, Harlem, the globetrotting.
Would play.
Yeah, who wouldn't play? That'd be awesome. You could play as a little tiny short guy, or a huge tall guy, or a guy with a comically high-pitched voice, and all of them start with the ability to just keep a basketball spinning as long as they want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously. That's a Dex 1 ability.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then they have to save the world from the return of the Washington Generals.
Yeah.
I am on board for Harlem the Globetrotting.
Yes, 100% make this game.
Please do. Please make that game and send it to us. But then, you know, all you have to do is get those tropes that are so standard in that genre for White Wolf games is, okay, you need 5 classes, sort of, and then each one of them's good at 1 of 5 things, so just pick something that there's 5 of, and I don't know, it's just such a simple thing.
And I think that's why they kept that formula, is if you've played one of the White Wolf games and you go to another one, it's gonna be similar enough to what you read that you'll be able to jump into it. So, knowing you have that and making a parody about it, while you are making fun of what you're doing, like I said, that's what your fans and readers of that system want and expect.
Yeah.
So, meh.
Okay, he's got a follow-up here. Drist versus Elminster in a karaoke battle. Who wins? See, I feel like this one actually boils down, both of those are Mary Sues, like huge Mary Sue characters, so really it boils down to a karaoke battle between Bruce Greenwood and R.A. Salvatore. Now, I figure Greenwood's he's kind of a notorious pervo, he's a pervozoid of the highest order, and so I figure like he's gonna do one of those songs where he thinks it's funny in that kind of, haha, I'm laughing about sex, unless you're serious, in which case I'm serious too, haha, but if you're not, then neither am I, haha. So he's probably gonna do like Bad Touch by the Bloodhound Gang or Big Butts.
Oh, I thought, because you're saying, you know, sex, haha, just kidding, unless you're serious, I was going to say it's the getting hot in here, which is that's a line from It's Getting Hot in Here.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Nice.
There you go.
So I think that, and then Salvatore, he's an 80s power ballad kind of guy, if I've ever heard one. So.
Oh, yeah. Drist is totally going to do Don't Stop Believin'.
Yeah, or Warrants, or something by Poison. Huh? So it's really going to come down to that. As to the actual characters, I feel like Drist is going to do something morose and annoying off, the Crow soundtrack.
Well, the thing is, are we excluding magic? Because Elminster can just go, well, I use, glibness or whatever and fucking get...
We have to exclude their powers, because the lists of powers that they have are extensive and stupid. Because if you think about it, that would mean that Drizzt could use psionics, because he's psionic, and he's a high-level ranger, so he also has spells, and he is a talking panther who could do backup vocals for him.
Okay, so I'm giving it to Elminster if it's just the two of them. If you get the panther involved, I'm giving it to Drizzt.
Oh, who doesn't get the panther involved?
Oh, yeah, you gotta get that panther in there.
Right? If it's just the two of them and they don't get their powers, I'm still giving it to Elminster because there's nothing I like better than an old dude crooning out at karaoke. That's rad. Anytime they get up there and they do an old Sinatra song, I'm always
Elminster is going to do Fly Me to the Moon, and yeah. Drizzt is going to go up there and do fucking Wake Me Up.
He's going to go up there to do a Stained song or that Voodoo song.
Not that.
So he's going to get up there to sing Voodoo, but instead Chubby Checker's big hit Pony Time is going to come up on the air instead, and you're going to get Drizzt up there just looking at his feet and morosely muttering, what the fuck is Pony Time? That's what'll happen. Yeah. So Elminster all the way, doing a sweet song by Sinatra.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next question. This one's from Dylan Green. He sent his big list. We're going through them one at a time here. What is your deal with steampunk? Is it because it should be all about class and power, or isn't? Is it because it's not punk, per se? I'd be all over Adam Punk. I wonder if you would, too, if it wasn't for that punk word. I think perhaps the term has a different meaning in this context. If I said, hey guys, let's play retro fantastic 50s flavor sci-fi instead of let's play Adam Punk, would it be more appealing? Is it possible that we can use punk as a shorthand for aesthetically similar to, but cleverly reinterpreted, rather than, punk? Okay, you know what? Yes. Yeah, that's fine. We can do that.
Well, I mean, that's essentially what it has become.
Yeah,
so,
and the thing is, I know that we sound like we might be sticklers for language on this one, but we're not. We just like making fun of the concept that steampunk in particular is annoying because steampunk people are annoying. Because there aren't any Adam Punk people, we're on board for that. That sounds great to me. 50s sci-fi ray gun stuff? Yes. I'm even designing a character in my head the past couple of days because we've been talking about doing a Fate character creation live play session just for fun. Just so we can show that we don't only hate old RPGs.
Yeah.
And the one that's in my head is a 50s sci-fi ray gun guy. So yeah, I mean, we're fully on board. We just think steampunk people.
Well, it's also, even the punk term, even if you aren't really emphasizing it, does show up in a lot of things. Like, fucking Flash Gordon would be very sort of Adam Punk type thing.
If you were to remake him, I feel it has to be anachronistic for it to count as punk as well. You can't just say, well, Flash Gordon back in the 30s when he was a radio serial was totally punk. It's like, well, no, it was just pop culture at the time.
Yeah. Well, you can be popular and still be punk. Come on, man. You can be the Ramones.
That's true. But you don't want to.
Well, I mean, you might want to.
Yeah, I guess that's true. All right. Okay. Anyway, that's our answer to that one. Yes, we are down with punk as a genre because we do kind of retro-futurism sci-fi trappings.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't have to just be that. But like I said, even in something like Flash Gordon, the whole point was he was fighting against something.
Sure.
The problem with steampunk is no one's fighting against anything. There's no resistance. It's just I'm dressing up in Victorian clothes gear.
What we really don't like is steampunk fashion.
Yeah, because it doesn't have anything to do with a genre. It's just, I want to dress up in Victorian clothes with cogs on it. And if that's what you want to do, great, do it. I don't really care. But it's not really a steampunk.
All right, I'm going to answer one more from you, because you still have a lot of them here, but I want to do one more out of our friend. If you could make an RPG out of any licensed property, as those wonderful folks who made the Duckman RPG. Science Fantasy Games, I want to say.
Oh, yeah.
No, Fantasy Strike. Fantasy Strike Games. Good people there. It's the most wonderful folks who made the Duckman RPG had the glorious opportunity to do, what would it be? How would you go about it?
Ooh, well, I mean, we've already mentioned Harry Potter.
Yeah, we mentioned Harry Potter. We've mentioned Harlem the Globetrotting. We've done a lot of these.
I mean, 100% my RPG of choice based on a license is Sliders.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with alternate reality stuff. I loved the first two seasons of Sliders, even though I own four. And it's a concept where it's great for one-shots. It's great for a continuing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You've got always something new going on, but because of the concept of the timer in there, you can have a game be in one setting for a long time.
Yeah.
And I just like that they also did a whole bunch of weird crap too. Because it wasn't just like, oh, we go to a different Earth and it's like ours, but only slightly different. Mm-hmm. There's a lot where it's like, yeah, and fucking magic works here. Who even cares?
Right. So I think I've said this before, but one of my personal dream RPGs, and it might even exist, and I still just won't do the research. I'm so lazy, you guys.
So lazy.
I'm just busy designing shirts for everybody. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, this podcast is happening while he's laying down in bed, and I'm just holding a mic up to him, and I'm just praying that he'll have the energy to get up at some point.
Yeah, I haven't even taken the toast out of my mouth from breakfast this morning. Anyway, my dream would be a really good Jurassic Park RPG.
Huh.
And I've said that before, and mostly because I have a big old dinosaur fascination, but I love the idea of playing employees in a Jurassic Park setting who have to escape Jurassic Park. That's my dream. I want it to be like, literally, you're not good employees of Jurassic Park. You're like, I'm the guy who makes fried dough.
Oh yeah, well no, it's that scene in Jurassic World where all the fucking pterodactyls are coming and swooping in on people, and you're the guy in the fucking, like, churro hut going, no running!
Yeah, that's me. I want to be the lifeguard at the Mosasaurus tank. That's the game I'd like to play. It's survival horror from dinosaurs, and your skill set is that you're really good at fried dough, and that you're willing to live in a dormitory on an island.
Yeah. I mean, sure, why not?
So that's, or just a good dinosaur RPG that's Jurassic Park themed, where you get to play as, like, dinosaur wranglers or something.
Well, it depends on if you want it to be, like, action-adventure, or if you want it to be survival horror.
Right, I just think that the genre, the concept of Jurassic Park is big enough to make some cool RPGs, and it's weird to me that I haven't seen them around. Again, they might exist, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alright, great, so thank you very much. There's a million more questions from you, we will keep getting to them as we can. Alright, of those, this is from AmiYumi, which is, I believe, a something awful handle.
Yay.
Of those you have seen and or are willing to make up on the spot, which anime would have the best tie-in RPG? The worst? Out of the two, which would you rather play? Okay, so we're going to give our standard vanilla American white guy answer to this.
So, Dragon Ball Z.
We've seen like 10 animes.
Alright, so obviously I think the correct answer for best tie-in RPG is High School of the Dead.
Yeah, that's a very good choice right off the bat, so good on you. Keep going, expand on this.
Well, it's going to have a lot of fan service and zombies, so you can't really go wrong with that.
That's true.
Yeah.
I would have no problem, and I'm going to blank on the name and then remember it. Yes, okay. The one where the girl wears the outfit that gives her superpowers. And
Sailor Moon?
No, Kill La Kill. Although that's also right. Kill La Kill is kind of a send-up of the Sailor Moon genre. And it's like a girl in school who wears an outfit that gets extra sexy when she wears it, but also gives her superpowers.
Hooray.
It's almost funny, but also very fan service-y. And I feel like the whole thing where everyone in school gets cool uniforms that give them superpowers related to what they do in school. I like that aspect. So like the tennis guys all can fire tennis ball cannons and so on. I thought that was fairly clever. The whole, you know, extended transformation sequences with a lot of junk shots I could pass on, but the whole, you get a school uniform and it gives you school uniform related superpowers, I thought that was great, would make a good RPG.
Yeah.
Okay, worst is any RPG that doesn't really have a plot, I'm gonna say, just...
Well, I was about to say any of the harem animes.
Yeah, any harem
anime. If you give me, like, Tenchi Muyo, the fucking RPG, I don't care anymore.
Yeah. You know the other one that I think that people would probably want to hear said out loud is Attack on Titan. Because it makes sense.
Yeah, you could definitely do that.
Acrobatic fighting against giants. The only problem with Attack on Titan is that it's got a real high mortality rate for a show like that. I've been pretty impressed watching the one season that exists at how fast they kill people off, except for the whiny main character. Let him die! He sucks.
No, he's the main character.
I know. So there you go. Out of the two, which would you rather play? So yours, your High School of the Dead, or my Kill La Kill? What? I'm gonna go for yours, because you've never seen Kill La Kill, so you don't know what's up.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I've seen High School of the Dead, so I can agree with you.
Of the harem versions of anime, I think the only one I would even be close to being okay with is that Rosario plus Vampire.
Oh, that's where they go to Vampire High School?
Yeah, it was just Monster High School, and then one human. Yeah. And he has to not tell anyone he's a human. That'd be funny just because it's Monster High School and I'd like
I want
to
name one of the older ones, but I'm so sure they all have RPGs. Like, I'm sure that there's a Ranma Half RPG that exists.
Maybe not officially, but I'm willing to bet 100% that someone has made that.
Also, there's no way there isn't a Slayers RPG.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be.
No, there's 100% guaranteed at least fan-made versions of all of that. There's going to be a Ghost in the Shell. There's going to be an Evangelion.
Yeah, Cowboy Bebop's probably got something, although that would be a terrible RPG. Because it's so singular about the characters.
Yeah, it suffers from Firefly syndrome in that you can make an RPG set in that universe, but you aren't the main character, so who gives a fuck?
Yeah. So, there we go. Plus, a lot of what makes Cowboy Bebop work is the music. So, without that cool jazz score behind everything, it's not going to be all that good of a game.
Well, you know, if the guy running the game has a good jazz selection.
Has access to Kano Yoko, or Yoko Kano, or whatever her name is. Yeah, okay. So let's move along. Next question, this one's from a Mark Green, and it's, how do you make rules light slash low prep games challenging without making it just about the GM being an ass? That's easy, just tell you, you know.
Don't be an ass.
If the GM's not an asshole, don't play with an asshole GM.
It doesn't matter if your game is rules light or not, if your GM's an ass, he's gonna be an ass.
So, rules light at low prep, I guess, means it's kind of an improv, kind of loose association game, kind of flowy. The trick to that is, really the only trick to that isn't the rules of the game, because you can't use rules from a game to stop someone from being an asshole. That's something that a lot of RPGs try to do, is regulate behavior. They shouldn't. The only thing they need to do to get the DM on the player's side is to encourage the DM to be on the player's side.
Yeah.
If the DM is on board with the idea that he's doing collaborative storytelling, then he's not going to be an asshole and it's going to be fun. If he's thinking that it's an adversarial game, then he's going to be adversarial. And there are games that can support that. You can make a game where the DM is throwing everything at the players and the players are just throwing everything right back, but those generally aren't rules light, low prep.
Yeah. The adversarial GM thing, I think having rules light, low prep games, if you want it to be challenging, then it's just the GM knowing what your guys can do, and what they can't do. So if you've got, say a group and most of you are good at combat, but you're not very good at, say, driving or something, then he can put a chase scene in there, and even with something that's rules light, you can have difficult challenges, and maybe you've got to make sharp turns, and there'll be some consequences, but it doesn't need to be, yeah, it's challenging because the DM is trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference between something being difficult and something being purposefully made to stop you from playing, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like all it really comes down to is collaborative storytelling interest, and really that's more of a personality thing than a rules thing. You just can't, there's no rule you can write that'll stop someone from being a dick.
Yeah, and if your players also are on board with the GM, like if you have something that's a challenge to what's going on in your game, but it requires one of the players to maybe sit out for a little bit in the game, or you have to depower someone, you have to make sure that that player is all right with it first. Because again, if you just go, as the GM, I decide you have to go sit by yourself for an hour, or I'm going to take away all your cool toys, then you're being an asshole. But if you go up to the player first and go, I've got this awesome story, I think it would be really cool and interesting for your character and development if this were to happen, but it requires me to take away this. And if they go, yeah, that sounds like an awesome story, then you can do it. If they go, no, fuck you, I want to have my cool double gun, then you're like, okay, great, whatever, you keep your double gun, and I don't tell a story about you.
Yeah, all right. So, question here from John Kaufman. What's your favorite conspiracy theory and or cryptid, and why? So, in case you don't know, a cryptid is a mythological animal, or a animal that is rumored to exist that probably does not. An animal for which there is no evidence.
A Bigfoot.
A Bigfoot, or a monster of the Loch Ness variety.
A Bigfoot, or a Yeti, or an abominable snowman.
Yeah, or a let's see, a skunk ape, or an old man of the mountain.
Yeah, any of those.
Yeah, any one of those, but only any one of those.
Yes, a cryptid is specifically one of those.
Yeah. A Harry of the Hendersons.
Oh, Harry the Hendersoning.
Harry the Hendersoning is our new RPG from White Wolf. It's the Sasquatch White Wolf RPG.
Woo!
How come that doesn't exist already?
Man. Oh, totally. That is a monster they have not done yet.
Yeah, they haven't done a Bigfoot.
Get on your shit, man.
Harry the Hendersons is the new one from White Wolf. Get it written, people.
Get her done.
All right. So, you want to go ahead, or you want me to take one?
I assume I know what yours is.
I'm not even sure if I'm going to do a cryptid or a conspiracy theory.
I was going to say, I was pretty sure that your favorite has to be chemtrails.
I do love chemtrails. Wow, that is very on point.
Oh, yeah. Because you actually know about planes and how fucking stupid it is.
I know a lot about airplanes. I know a lot about flight physics. I know a lot about altitude physics. I know a lot about what contrails actually are. I know a lot about flight paths, and so yes, I do know exactly what most chemtrails actually are. Plus, I know a lot about the physics of where they come down, so when you see them over your head, and you can quickly calculate wind speed and determine that they're gonna never settle to Earth, or if they do, it'll be hundreds of miles away. But no, silicon particles or something.
It's fluoride.
Ugh. It's so annoying, and once it gets in your head, it's like a disease, you're stuck with it.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite thing about any of the...
modern internet conspiracy theories.
The conspiracy theories where it is essentially, I've believed in this thing, and then if someone doesn't believe in it, it's because of that thing.
Yeah.
So if I believe that the government is actually run by reptoids, and someone else goes, that's stupid. You could never have a reptoid in the government. You go, you must be a reptoid agent.
Yeah. It's a self-fulfilling system. Or self-perpetuating system, and there's nothing you can do about it. I honestly, I don't really like the chemtrails, because I have a couple friends who believe in them.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad.
Yeah, it's real sad.
And all they ever say when you point it out is, well, we can have different viewpoints. We can have different views on this. Yeah, okay, we can have a right view and a crazy view. You're correct.
Oh, it makes me so happy.
Yeah, at least it's relatively harmless if you think that you're going to be unhappy tomorrow because you see clouds.
I got a cold because there was chemtrails. Okay, ugh. Great.
All right. But no, I actually do like a lot of cryptids as well. I'm a big fan of this sort of thing. My personal favorite in the cryptid genre is the Blobster. I know that's a dumb name, and
I think that was my wrestler name.
The Blobster.
Are you ready for Blobomania to run wild over you? Come on, little Blobomaniacs.
I like that the Blobster is basically Hulk Hogan, but lazy.
Yeah, which is basically me. That's how I live my life.
Yeah. Are you ready for the Blobster to just sit down for a minute?
I got to try to rip my shirt and just pull at the collar for a second,
just mess
then stop.
Up the collar. Oh, man, if you're ready for these 24-inch pythons of pure fat, brother.
Oh,
they're going to wriggle.
Oh, yeah, that's that. There you go.
All right.
I'm glad you have that mental image now, everyone.
Yeah, from a talking hot dog. Okay, so the Blobster is a giant glob of unidentifiable flesh that washes up on a shore. It happens a lot. It actually happens a couple times every decade or so. They find these big lumps of something, and they figure maybe it's from a monster, maybe it's from a giant jellyfish. They don't know. 99 to 100% of the time, it's a decaying basking shark, because when they decay into a way that makes them look like they have wavy arms.
Hmm.
It's a really neat thing. The reason I like them so much is because they find the evidence. They actually find these giant globs of crap that wash up. It's almost always a decaying whale or a shark. But it's neat because it's a thing where there's these giant 70-foot-long stretches of goo that wash up on beaches. That's neat to me. I like a lot of ocean cryptid stuff. I like studying the bloop.
I was about to mention that was probably one of my favorite of the cryptids is the bloop.
Take it.
Oh, yeah. So they had a noise that came from deep in the ocean, and they had no idea what it was.
The neat thing about the bloop is that there's nothing that we know of that can make that noise. Like, we can't even generate it synthetically.
Yeah, and so everyone was like, what the shit? And it was coming from so deep that they were like, I don't think anything lives down there.
Yeah.
And so, of course, everyone was like, oh my god, it's Cthulhu!
Yeah, the actual evidence suggests that the bloop is the sound of ice calving, or ice breaking off from a glacier in the Arctic Circle, because that makes a tremendous amount of noise. It's hard to get a concept of exactly how big an ice calving event is. Even if you look at it, it doesn't look like anything big, because it's hard to get a grasp on just ice moving around.
Yeah.
But the noise it makes is deafening, and so the bloop was probably that. But it's really cool to think that there's a noise that occurred that we picked up and have on tape. We have no idea what the fuck that was.
Yeah, that is great to me.
Yeah.
Because other things where it's like, it's a cryptid of this weird,
there's
like,
a monster in the woods and a drunk guy saw it.
Yeah. Whenever you get something like, it's the Jersey Devil, I'm like, no, that doesn't exist. I'm sorry. Maybe you could get away with believing in this crap, like, 100 years ago, but right now, everyone carries a camera with them at all times.
Yeah, it's like the chupacabra is always, like, a decayed raccoon or a decayed manta ray. Like, it's always one of those two things, because a dried manta ray, the face becomes very visible and weird-looking.
Yeah.
So those, but things like where you get a little enough evidence to kind of solve it, but not quite, like the bloop.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Super great.
So there you go. Those are some of my personal favorites of the cryptids. He's got a bonus follow-up here. What real-world craziness have you successfully incorporated into your game sessions? Let's see. When we're designing characters, because I don't know that I've ever played or run a modern game myself. I prefer to play stuff that takes me outside of my zone. I mean, we've already established that I'm the guy that doesn't even play humans if it's an option not to.
Yeah. I think I've been in maybe one modern day game, and even that lasted for a session or two.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've tried to build characters with a little bit of a take on stuff. I've tried to incorporate the story of Alexander the Great into a character, that sort of thing. But modern real world craziness just hasn't come up all that often for me. I prefer to take my inspiration from sources that aren't as easily tracked.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I'm never gonna have a skunk ape be a thing that some party members find and fight. Nor am I going to have a, like, Loch Ness monster or something like that. So I'm not gonna have any of those weird things in there. And the real world craziness, I don't think I've had a guy who believed in some weird stuff. Like, I haven't even really had a character that was super superstitious about something.
Yeah, no, I haven't really either. It just hasn't come up for us, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, maybe we shouldn't have even answered that one. Should have just let it go, because it didn't really generate much. But
yeah, well,
not your fault, that's our fault. That's on us. We're terrible.
Yeah, we're boring people that only want to make characters that are boring. I made an accountant.
Yeah, and I made an elf fighter. Who fights
elves?
Elves.
Yeah, he's an elf fighter.
He fights elf style. Oh, let's get one more in. You know, a couple minutes left here. Let's get one more fun one in. And this one, we're going to jump back to our prodigious question answer, Dylan Green. Lastly, who would? I shouldn't put the lastly in because I have so many questions from this guy. Who would win in a fight between the two of you? That's right. No question mark. Full fucking stop. Okay. I would probably win in an actual physical confrontation between the two of us, but John would win the hearts of the fans.
It's true. I would be bloodied but not broken, mm-hmm. and I would be the fan favorite. I would be basically Rocky.
Yeah, you'd have a Rocky finish. So while I would probably win the fight, it wouldn't be a good win. It'd be a bad win.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't feel good about it, and John wouldn't feel good about it either, but he'd still win in spirit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah, he's the Rudy of this scenario.
Yeah, I'm a small, weird guy, and I shouldn't be fighting.
Shouldn't be getting in a fight. I'm equally weird, but I played a lot of water polo.
Yeah.
So I've
you at one point in your life had developed muscles.
I still do. They're under there somewhere. So there you go. But would we fight?
I can't think of a scenario. Maybe.
How angry would I have to make you before you'd want to fight me?
You'd have to make me real angry. Like,
I don't think there's anything I can affect your life on that would do that.
We'd have to get real crazy about this.
Yeah.
We'd be like, well, I bought you a puppy, and 3 years later, I shot your dog. And then I used your dead dog to beat your mom to death. So let's have at
it. Let's get to it. I needed to answer that question that we got asked on the internet.
I needed to satisfy the internet's curiosity, so you know how it is.
And then you'd be like, well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, we did that show together.
Oh, that is fair.
That is a reasonable reason to do this, yeah. Oh, shoot.
Oh, now I don't want to fight you again.
Okay, there you have it.
Great.
So, just so everyone knows, we're going to be doing a guest appearance on someone else's podcast fairly soon. We're recording this episode significantly in advance, I'm not exactly sure of the date, but we've been invited to appear for a live play episode or appearance on the She's a Super Geek podcast, which is a relatively new show that's coming out of the Peaches and Hot Sauce Network. We've already done a show with them. We're on an episode of Critical Success where we discussed The Heartbreaker with James D'Amato, the host of that network. She's a Super Geek is a new spinoff of theirs. It's a show where they celebrate female GMs and DMs. And so they do live play. So far they've done mostly like Fate Accelerated and stuff. Mm-hmm. They've asked us for a terrible RPG that we could run fairly easily.
Great.
That's tricky because usually a terrible RPG is not easy to run.
That's the whole point.
But I think I know one. I think I know the one that I'm going to bring to their attention. I know this is going to be stupid to suggest to a feminist friendly and very female empowering podcast, but I think we should play Maid.
I think we should play Haven City of Violence.
Oh God, I can't even play it. I don't know how. I can't teach three other people to play it and then have one of them run it. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. Just so you know, we want you to know about the She's a Super Geek podcast. Check them out. Give them a listen. You could just Google She's a Super Geek and there they are.
And while you're looking up the other podcasts that we have been on, while you're on iTunes or Stitcher, go ahead and give us a rate. Give us a review. Helps other people find us. Helps us out. Makes it so that we feel better about ourselves and the crippling depression that pervades our entire existence.
That's just you. I'm actually more of a manic. By all means, give us a rate and review on iTunes and Stitcher. The thing for us is that this whole podcast is just a big dumb joke. And if we made it to the point where more people had to listen to us, that would be amazing.
Oh, if you showed up on iTunes and they were like, hey man, why don't you give a listen to this? That would be hilarious.
Yeah, because we aren't. This isn't.
No one should listen to us.
No, this is terrible. This shouldn't even be a thing. It's the same thing with our Cheese Dude shirt, which, amazingly, you can buy at TeePublic by searching for System Mastery Store, or by searching for Cheese Dudes, where it's now like the third result on Google is our shirt sale.
Which is amazing that there are things ahead of us for Cheese Dudes.
The funny thing is that Cheese Dudes as a concept really is on us. Like, there's a few people whose Twitter handle is the Cheese Dude and stuff, but I couldn't believe that no one else had it. So if that shirt, we want people to buy it and wear it and to convince other people that it's real.
Yes, please convince everyone that it is an actual restaurant.
In Vegas.
It is in Vegas. You can find it. You just have to search a little bit. They're new. You might not find them.
Yeah.
Please make Yelp reviews for Cheese Dudes.
Oh, dude, yeah. If we can get you started on Yelp reviews for Cheese Dudes, that would be the best. It's in Vegas. Make a bunch of reviews about how it's kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
That'd be the best. Okay. So, now that we're done hyping ourselves by denigrating ourselves, let's wrap this bad boy up. We're the System Mastery and Afterthought Podcast. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, on iTunes and Stitcher, where you should rate and review us, or drop us emails or tweets or Facebook messages, especially if you have questions for the show. If you have a question you'd like us to answer on the Afterthought, please send it to us. It does not matter what it is.
Yeah, if you want to know what my favorite camping experience was, great.
Surprise, he's never been camping.
Oh, I go camping all the time. I love camping.
Camping's great. In like your yard.
Yeah, I take a tent out into the yard. My tent looks like a brontosaurus. And I go into the yard, and I pretend I'm a dinosaur.
I pretend I'm a dinosaur's food. Because I'm inside of a brontosaurus.
Yeah, and then I could take one of the little things, and it lets me move the brontosaurus head. And if my mom comes out, I just wave the head over to her, and I go, rah!
It scares her, even though...
Give me leaves!
Even though a brontosaurus is a plantosaur. It doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
Remember? Because it's an apatosaurus now.
No. What I have is a brontosaurus. Don't you take that away from me.
I'm sorry, I won't. You know, I read recently that they were trying to eliminate Triceratops as a dinosaur type and saying that it was a different ceratopsid. And I was like, no, stop it. Stop taking him away. What's next, Stegosaurus?
Yes. They're all nothing. It's all just one dinosaur. Yeah. We're all finding different bits of one of them.
Oh, that would be amazing. One super huge, like...
10-headed Hydra.
15 tails. Looks like that dragon spaceship from Rift's Atlantis. That'd be great.
It's just Tiamat. That's what we found.
We're just finding Satan's bones. The fundamentalists were right, folks.
What do you know?
Yeah. Anyway, contact System Mastery and ask us literally any question at all. And until then, have a lovely week.